Now, all of you know John, but I will formally say he's John Wood, and he's here to talk about Jesus Christ, the life of the mind in professional formation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Randy. Thank you kindly. You know, I'm a retired professor. I call myself an extinguished professor. And we profs, we end up speaking in 50-minute blocks, so 20 minutes is going to be a trial. Well, this is both a professional and a personal talk, and I'll begin with a little overview and personal discussion about the life of the mind and see if we can unpack this title, which actually comes, borrowed this from, with slight modification, from a book by Dr. Mark Knoll, and that book was written in 2011 when Mark Knoll, some of you know, historian who was at Wheaton College for many of his years, and then he moved and finished his career at Notre Dame University. And I found this a challenging and impressive book, and I have two thought questions up there for you just to start with. Think about your own career, your own professional engagement. How did the trajectory of your career begin? How did you get to where you are today, if you're early career, mid-career, or like me, you've graduated into retirement? And secondly, how does your faith impact your work as you think about that? Growing the Christian mind is an interesting challenge, and I first ran into this in 1962. I was a sophomore, and just entering high school, and we had a series of seminars that speakers that would come monthly through. And remember, this is 1962, so a title of a well-rounded square had some significance and meaning to young people. As that individual started talking, either very shortly or within some couple of years, my attention was drawn to Jesus' life. And we get just a very light snippet, this one verse that tells us about him as a teenager. You know the story. He was up at the temple. His parents went home. He got left behind. They chewed him out. I know your parents never did that to you when you were distracted with what was significant in your life. And then we get this verse. Luke sums it up. And this is what the speaker confronted us with, there are really four things that were going on there. That Jesus kept on growing in wisdom, in stature, in favor with God, and in favor with others. That was a nice encapsulation that a teenager could get a hold of. My pastor somehow figured that out, began to play some with that, and with all of us talking about our careers and our futures, and suddenly we found ourselves in conversation one day, and he said to me, John, we need men like you in the ministry. What are you going to do? And he said, you should go to a Christian college and get prepared to be a minister. I applied, or I was thinking about applying to North Park, now University. Told my dad about it. Dad looked at the sticker price, said, no, I don't think you can go. A week later, at dinner, on a Thursday night, I think it was, you know how it is, your dad pushes back from the table, looks at you and says, about that college, the president called. I think you can go. We have some missionary friends that that call those kinds of events God sightings, God moments in your life. And I just went, oh, wow, I get to go to college. I get to go to Chicago. And my life began to change. If you know the 1960s, those of you who are old enough or you saw it in social studies class, it was a dynamic time, not unlike the days that we're in. Military conflict, civil unrest and conflict, and important for my career choice, environmental awareness just arising with Rachel Carson and Silent Spring. There were lots of other things going on. I had a roommate who was a music major. No, I can't play an instrument. I also was in athletics of various kinds. My mind was on many things and these conflicts that were going around, and I was being shaped and formed in particular by one individual, E. James Kennedy. He was the department chair, and he was also one of the co-leaders of the ASA meeting in summer of 1966 at North Park. And so, without knowing it, in my classes, I was being infused with the ethos of the ASA. And at the end of that, at my graduation, I actually took some time off, came back and graduated in 1974, and I was given a student membership. And now, this year, I get the white ribbon for 50 years of membership in the ASA. This organization has been pivotal in helping me think through what the Christian mind might look like. A couple of other things that showed up quickly, and this is a little time sequence. In 1968, I needed a job. I did not have a summer work. I'd been on the mission field, didn't have it, needed it. Discovered something, an article by John Bowles and John Crystal, or Richard Bowles, pardon me, and John Crystal, on informational interviewing. And I actually sort of said, oh, I can do that. And I went in and started talking to different companies about water. And who does your water testing? And before long, I had a summer job testing water on a reservoir. And it was a study that eventually resulted in a $150,000 installation. That's pretty remarkable as an undergraduate to be able to have that kind of chance to do research. A little later in my career, I looked in a crisis moment, where am I going to go with this PhD study that I'm in that is extremely difficult? Well, I think I might go, well, and I looked back using this methodology on finding your mission in life, look back to figure out, what am I going to do? What have I always done? Well, it turns out that I've always helped in labs, in my undergraduate work, in every place that I was teaching. And I realized I actually need to get the PhD and begin in order to get into this career that I think God is calling and gifting me for. Fast forward to the ASA. A few years ago, we were at a point where we had to think through our mission. The board and had been thinking about a book, reading a book called Mission Drift, and asking ourselves the question, is the ASA on its traditional mission, or have we drifted in some way? We were noticing a long-term trend in membership decline. Our budget had been flat for a number of years, despite all of the efforts. And Randy knows, I'm looking at Randy because he knows this as well as anyone, our annual fund giving was not going up at a pace that we actually needed. There are a number of things we started asking, and we realized, oh, wait a minute, what are we actually doing? How are we talking about ourselves? One of the things that we discovered was we were talking about scholarship. And this diagram, strategic diagram, which some of you have seen, focused on our mapping our mission and mapping our capacity to reach it, and trying to figure out, we have to ask ourselves the question, oh, here we are in 2020. It's only 20 short years until we reach 100. What are we going to be like? How are we going to get there? There are really three things we do. Scholarship, that's this meeting, and our journal, and that primary work. But we also engage in community and fellowship, and that's a priority for us. But in the middle, we realize we also do professional formation and development. And here was the seed of the idea of Mark Knoll's book, Jesus Christ, The Life of the Mind and Professional Formation. Well, I thought back to a few years ago when my colleague and I invited Fred Van Dyke to speak on professional formation in Christian environmental professionals. And Fred addressed the topic, what is a Christian environmental professional? We handed that to him with no other instruction. He came up with five features of professional formation that a Christian environmental professional might want to consider. First of all, you're a professional. Secondly, a colleague, then a bridge, a witness, and finally, creation's advocate. I'm going to briefly unpack these in this way. Professional formation, we all understand, whether it's Peter Drucker's managing yourself, whether it's questions about work and integrity, ethical standards, or as Praveen said to us last evening from this stage, the critical thing for a professional is excellence. Your performance is what you're going to be judged upon first. But you're also judged on some other things that you do, your interactions with your colleagues. And to help here was a book that some of you have seen, being in Christian Science, but a couple of individuals. One of them's with us here today. Bill Jordan's going to raise his hand, and there's the older version of the younger version on screen. Bill Jordan was formed and mentored by Walt Hearn, our weary old editor, woe is me, he called himself. But at the same time, Bill and I didn't know this, Walt was also mentoring me in grad school at Berkeley. He had me setting up local chapter meetings. I'm trying to do a PhD, but he did all the background work, found the speakers, found the venue and the rest, and said, John, just call people. Remember, this is 1979, 1980. Just call people. He gave me the list. That's like T-ball. And he got me working on local chapter engagement. Well, you learn skills in how to engage people and your colleagues. He was a mentor. We do this formally through the local chapters. We do it through the prayer committee and praying for people. You're a professional, but you're also a colleague. You learn to support one another in more than just a personal and devotional ways, but you learn to support people with a set of skills. So as you're a professional, you're a colleague. Oh, and I shouldn't forget, started on this screen, networking and building partnerships, and Vicky and Janelle are the entire team are busy going around the country. Many of you received visits, and that is being a colleague to one another. But now, before we go on to the third here feature, let's pause for a moment and consider what's happening in Christian scholarship and the development of the Christian mind. There's a long history here that's gone on from George Marsden's book back in the 1990s called The Outrageous Idea of Christian Scholarship. You heard from this stage that that is still the case in the academy. There are pockets and places in which if you identify yourself as a believer, and particularly if you say you happen to be an evangelical believer today, it is so highly fraught and difficult. That's not true of every piece of the academy or at every department or discipline, but it is there, and a general perception. So how do you develop a scholarship? Imagine, what image comes to mind when you think of the idea of Christian scholarship, what words would you use to describe your Christian mind? Here's another word that Fred Van Dyke gave us. You're a professional, you're a colleague, but you're also a bridge. The mission of the ASA is explicitly to bridge between science and the church. We've been doing that for 83 years. And we continue to do that. And we were student-focused right from the outset in the earliest of our publications and intentions. So it's about being intentional, not just individually, but corporately as an organization in order to reach others. Recently, some publications have come out on the Christian mind, and thinking about us now, not so much as individual thinkers and scholars, but as public intellectuals, with a definition of a public intellectual as one who is engaged with communicating their disciplinary knowledge in their communities of one type or another. In addition, George Marsden has issued this long history of the soul of the American university. It's a very interesting read on the academy and its formation. And I would say to you, if you have colleagues in the secular academy, they likely don't know what's going on there. Besides being a bridge and knowing how to bridge from your work to another, we are called to be a witness. And that includes the kinds of things that we do in our affiliation groups, in our partnerships, in all of that extended way. We create and develop the Christian mind and express it in our communities. And finally, we are creation's advocate. Now, creation's advocate for an environmental scientist makes sense. Creation care, advocate for creation, we get that. But that also means discovery. Many of us are involved in primary discovery in government, in industry, and the academy as well. Here's Charles Townsend, 1964 Nobel Prize, ASA member, who gave a ASA plenary address in 2003. I happened to hear it. I didn't remember that until I looked it up, but it was at Pepperdine, one of the early meetings that I went to. He was the Nobel Prize for Physics, developing MASER first for microwave and then laser technology, which we are using right now. All of us are dependent on. And that's discovery and using the Christian mind to discover how the world works. In addition to that, he received the Templeton Prize in 2000, I have 23 here, but it's 2005, the Templeton Prize for religion and science because of his work, plenary address with us, publishing in our journal, and also writing books. Now, obviously, public intellectual Catherine Hayhoe, all of us, I think, know her name, a Canadian scientist working in Texas on climate and communicating. This is a snippet from the evening news and the CBC. I was watching TV one night, boom, there is Catherine. And I go, oh, that's great. And nice thing about the evening news, they show it again later, so I could pick her up an hour later. And really fun to see somebody that you know. Well, there are other public intellectuals. I happen to watch the NASA channel, and Jennifer Wiseman all of a sudden pops up on the screen. Oh, it's like I want to say hello to her when she's there. So we have people in very many places, high public profile people, but many of you are in your own community. And I know you're in your churches, and I know that's the opportunity to speak the Christian mind. The ASA helps you do that. Workshops, Introducing Faith and Science. We had one here with Sock. We're launching a Faith Work Accelerator. There are helping to mentor people moving toward careers. And there's the ASA Career Center. So we were very intentional in trying to help develop on the career and vocational side. And then finally, I'd mention a thought question for you to leave you with. What career profession offers the greatest impact? And how will your work change the world? As one of my colleagues said, work is the expression of love of your neighbor. And we need to do that out of the mind of Christ. Let this mind be in you. Let this mind be in you. And let us all help one another develop intentionally the Christian mind. Thank you.
Thank you very much, John. Questions? Comments? This wasn't very controversial, John. You know?
I don't think this is controversial. I'm preaching to the choir. But let me make an observation, Randy.
Okay.
And that is that one of the things I've noticed, I asked Mike Beiler this question. Mike's in a government office doing rapid prototyping of weapons systems. That's all he can tell you. Can't tell you anything else. And I said, Mike, in your contract with the government, it does say in there somewhere, doesn't it, that you need to integrate and bring your faith perspective to bear on these integration? Why are you laughing, Randy? Well, you know, those of us who are in Christian colleges and universities, guess what? That's contractual. If I don't do it, my dean, well, that's me, my dean will come after me. And so we have a literature, we have conferences, seminars, we encourage one another, we're like iron sharpening iron. And the ASA can be that across all the professions, all the disciplines for us. And so I think as we think about our scholarship, that's one, and that's vital, but we also need to think about professional formation. Thank you. Steve, go for it.
Great job, John. Thank you. And anybody young that's listening, listen to John. Great wisdom.
You better hold it down.
So here's the question, and I'm gonna call it maintenance. So that second to last slide said, how can I make the most impact? Not a wrong question, but you did speak about balance, and I actually think there is a balance between sort of cutting edge and taking care of. What is that balance? And I'll let you say whatever you want to say about balance, but oftentimes there's balance in these things.
Thanks, Steve. Good question. My hearing is really bad. If I got it right, it's about family and that involvement. You and I have talked about that, and I'm looking across the audience, and I see others where we've talked about that balance. I went through a PhD program. I came out with a wife and a church. I had colleagues who came out with a PhD and no spouse. A PhD program, as we all know, have been through them, is a demanding mistress. I've also talked with young people who have come out of PhD programs. We've interviewed them for jobs in a Christian setting. And we say, well, you know, how did you integrate your faith in your discipline? And they go, well, you know, I was so busy with my PhD that I didn't have time. And that has come up in a number of forums here. Can we park our faith for 4 years or 6 years? Can we do the postdoc and the end of that? And then we show up at the church door and say, I'm ready to serve the Lord. And these are not easy. And so all the way through that, I had pastors, I had leaders in my church who were my mentors. And then I also had a major professor and also fellow graduate students giving me the elbow. You know, John, we're going to meet on Thursday night. As my major press says, we'll meet on Thursday night. That is, if John can get away from his other job. I had never said anything about the fact that I was chairman of the Christian Ed Committee of my church. You know, on the rest of the family part of it, I think you should ask Kathy, because she was on the receiving end. But we faced some challenges, and I learned that I had to care and love for my wife, not just my scholarship.
Thank you very much, John. Okay, let's thank John once more. And